If you look at the world around you today, you'll find that there's totally the opposite going on. No one wants to think deeply. And they feel themselves quite successful in life if they don't have to think deeply. Their whole society, their whole culture is designed to prevent deep thought. People simply want to be entertained. The more they're entertained, the more they think their life is successful. To be entertained means, let me not think, just titillate my mind, give me something for my mind to play with. In this way, it's very difficult to present to people the value of Krishna consciousness when these people are lost in a society that has trained them not to think. This Bhagavad Gita is a thoughtful book. It's the best of thoughtful books. How can persons approach Bhagavad Gita when their brains have totally been destroyed and their thinking processes have totally been impeded? They don't want to think, they want to be entertained. This makes it very difficult to preach Krishna consciousness. In fact, people become offended if you try to get them to think about things. Nevertheless, we're carrying on this work because it is the desire of Krishna's representatives. Often it is a thankless task, especially when you're dealing with people who don't even understand the basics of a good material civilization. What to speak of spiritual civilization? Acts of sacrifice, charity, and penance are not to be given up. They must be performed. Vedic civilization divides human beings into different classifications, as you all know. Now, all these components, sacrifice, charity, and penance, pervade all the different ashramas. But particular ashramas have their specialties. For the brahmachari and sannyasi, tapa, austerity, is their specialty. What does austerity mean? Very handy definition for austerity is the voluntary acceptance of inconvenience for a higher purpose. Tolerating temporary pains because you have a higher goal in mind. This is very easy to realize when you're on a long flight, intercontinental flight. You must sit there 12, sometimes 13 hours. You go from London to Singapore, 13 hours. And you must sit there, and you cannot do anything about who's seated next to you. You cannot change the seating arrangements. So many things you have to accept. There's a movie screen right in front of your eyes. You can't rip it off the wall of the airline, of the aircraft. You can't do that. So you have to figure out, how am I going to function in these circumstances? You can't go complain to the flight crew about the person who's seated next to you. You just have to accept that I'm going to tolerate inconveniences for the purpose of getting to my destination. This is the example Prabhupada gave about how we should handle inconveniences in living amongst devotees. We should always think, what is my purpose? What is my destination? Let me make sure that I'm making progress towards my destination. And then if I have to tolerate some inconveniences while heading toward my destination, let me do so. This is nothing exotic. This is nothing mystical. It's plain common sense. The same as when you're on an intercontinental flight. You rather not sit next to this person or that person. You certainly don't want the movie screen in front of your face. But what can you do? You have to tolerate all these inconveniences to get to your destination. One way you can understand the lack of manishi, the lack of a thoughtful person in society today, is that no one thinks about their destination. In fact, they do everything except think about that. When people come to Krishna consciousness, they have been so scarred, their thinking processes have been so destroyed, that it's very difficult to get them to focus on the fact that they must choose a destination and adopt the necessary behavior to achieve that destination. In this verse, Krishna is describing that there are certain things that must be there: sacrifice, charity, and penance. The brahmacharis and sannyasis specialize in austerity. It doesn't mean that austerities are not there in the other ashramas, but particularly the brahmacharis and sannyasis are known for voluntarily accepting inconvenience. And what are grihasthas? What's their specialty? Charity, dana, always giving. That combats the usual tendency to be selfish. I have my own house, I have my own family, don't bother me. Therefore, grihasthas purify themselves by constantly giving charity. You can give in terms of money, but as they say in the Western world, time is money. So when grihasthas give time, that's also charity. Of course, austerity is also there, and everyone is performing yajna, sacrifice. As we all know, there are no complex Vedic yajnas in Kali Yuga. Everyone is involved in the Sankirtan yajna. The congregational distribution of Krishna's glories. Now, we've done this before, but it's worth repeating. Try to understand where so much of the difficulty in your becoming Krishna consciousness, try to understand where it comes from. Understand the world around you, a world in which even the basics of spiritual advancement are missing. People have no idea of sacrifice, charity, and penance. They'll willingly accept so much inconvenience for material purposes, but they have zero idea how to do that for spiritual purposes. You may remember Prahlad Maharaj saying in the seventh canto of the Bhagavatam that it is easy to reestablish your relationship with Krishna just as it is easy for a son to reestablish his relationship with the father. Prahlad Maharaj is very firm about that. It is easy to reestablish your relationship with Narayan. And then what else does he say? On the other hand, going to hell requires a lot of work. This is Prahlad Maharaj. Going to hell requires great endeavor. You actually have to work hard to destroy yourself. But people are willing to do that. And they think, oh, controlling the senses, becoming Krishna conscious is so unnatural. Well, this is what makes it difficult for you to practice Krishna consciousness. You do not feel the support of society behind you. And that's what's rattling your brains. That's what's making you unsteady. You cannot look out around you and see that everyone is cheering you onwards. Yes, yes. Be a good brahmachari. Be a good grihastha. It's not happening. You're not getting the governor of California, you know, coming and your ideal people. I really appreciate what you're doing. If the whole state of California would follow you, we'd have a better state. It's just not happening. It's rare that your parents will say that. You don't feel the peer support. You don't feel the approval of society. And therefore, there's always, to a certain extent, doubt in the mind. That, oh, am I really doing the right thing? And could I be doing something else beside devotional service? And is there really any value to controlling my senses? And how long can I go on like this? You think in this way because you're surrounded by an ocean of nescience. And therefore, the value of devotional service becomes very minimized and obscured when contrasted to the all-pervading sense gratification. So this is what makes our life a little difficult. Maybe some of you in the audience, you're not fully practicing Krishna consciousness, but you've given it some thought. But then again, when you think about, well, what will my family think? What will my friends think? What will society think? You become weak. Once you understand the source of difficulty, then you can develop the intelligence to counteract that difficulty. Prabhupada's books are meant to arm you with sufficient strength for counteracting the all-pervading nescience around you. Prabhupada was very expert. He understood what it would take for someone to be Krishna conscious now in the current world situation. So his books arm you with everything necessary for weaving your way through all the obstacles of the illusory energy. That's why these books are so extraordinary. Srila Prabhupada knew exactly what someone needs to know for going back to Godhead in this present Kali Yuga. And he gave that information in his books. Once you understand what you're up against, you're surrounded by an ocean of nescience. You get no support from society, no support from the government. Rarely do you get support from your parents. No appreciation. And so that rattles you. It makes you weak. Then, combined with that lack of support and appreciation, you have so much Kali Yuga vice thrown under your nose everywhere you look. So therefore, you start to shake. And even though you may externally be in devotional service, internally you haven't made a deep commitment. You're kind of just treading water, or you're just kind of hanging out in Krishna consciousness. Because, on the one hand, there's this ocean of nescience all around you. And on the other hand, there's the provocations of Maya assaulting you at every step. And then it makes for a weak heart. Now, if that heart is going to become lion-like and strong, you actually have to confront yourself regularly. What am I doing here? What's my purpose? Why am I accepting these inconveniences? Now, in this verse, Krishna is saying that even if you are a Manishi, even if you are a great soul, still you have to perform these acts. Not only for the benefit of society, but also for the benefit of yourself. Because these things, yajna, dana, tapa, they are the components of anyone's spiritual life, whether neophyte or most advanced. You'd be shocked how even the primitive understanding of these components is missing today. I have one disciple who, before he was a devotee, he's about 20 years old, and you know, naturally, like every young man, he had a girlfriend. And on his own, he came to the conclusion that illicit relations between young man, young woman, is not proper. I didn't feel right about it. I just, on my own, even without contacting Prabhupada's books, I just thought, this is off. This is just, I can't believe that this is what life's about. So he told the girl, she was 19, hey, let's just cut this out. I just don't feel right about it. All right, so the next day he went to visit the girl at her house, and the mother answered the door and started to berate him. What are you, some kind of nutcase? what are you doing to my daughter? You're not, what's wrong with you? Are you some kind of strange guy? This is society today. The mother was accusing him of abusing the daughter because he wanted to control her senses. These things are quite common. Last time I was here, I was traveling with a devotee, and he knows about these kind of things. Because he was traveling everywhere with me, he heard me recite all these various kinds of stories, and he would always laugh. Yeah, I know. People are out of it. Maharaj really knows. Yeah, I've seen it myself. You know, people are just crazy these days. Yeah, my family wasn't that bad. My material life wasn't that bad. You know, well, of course, my parents were divorced, but hey, no big deal. And, Yeah. When I hear about these other people, oh, I'm just amazed. Cats and dogs. So we got back from our trip a few months ago, you know, and he has his own business. So we landed at the airport, and I went to the temple, and he went, you know, back to his place. He was staying with his relatives, you know, to earn some money again, and, you know, and any chance Hare Krishna, everything like that, but he's a self-supporting bachelor. So he went to his sister's house. He figured, I'll stay with my sister. And she's in her 30s, married with a couple kids. But when he got there was a raging party going on. So, oh, I can't stay here. I know, I'll just go a few blocks away. That's where my mother lives. It'll be peaceful and quiet there. His mother's pushing 60. So he went to his mother's house, walked in the door, and into the living room, and on the couch he saw his mother, who's pushing 60, sitting there holding hands with a guy who was 32. So he kind of, like, Mom, can you, he was trying to say, like, what the hell's going on? You know? Before he could get the words out of his mouth, the mother just said, oh, you're back, son. Let me introduce you to my boyfriend. And he just, like, looked, you know, he was like in a daze, you know. Like, all the thoughts were running through his mind. Mom, you're almost 60. This guy's 32. I mean, what's going on here? Finally, he was just speechless. He just picked his suitcase up and just walked out the door and, you know, slept in his car. So these things are going on. This is considered normal life these days. In fact, there's even a name for such situations when very old ladies have these young men. They're called toy boys. Nothing unusual. I've talked to quite a few young men who they're in their early 20s, late teens, 18 or 19. They brought their best friend, you know, their running buddy, you know, to their house, and the mother grabs them. Because the you know, there's so much divorce, so many single parents, and so the mother just sees that, you know. I have to have someone, you know. I'll take your friend. These things are going on. In such a polluted atmosphere, it is very difficult to become Krishna conscious. So this is what is making you weak. This constant din, the constant roar in the background of this pollution, and it rattles you, and therefore it's hard for you to develop that inner determination and resolution. So all the time you're doubting, do I really belong here, or can I really go the distance in bhakti, and am I really doing the right thing, and is Krishna really the Supreme Personality of Godhead? You're always wondering, and that's what makes you spaced out and weak. You don't have that inner conviction. But that inner conviction comes when you actually wrestle with what Bhagavad Gita is saying. Okay. Acts of sacrifice, charity, and penance are not to be given up. Well, what is going on in the world today? And what am I doing in the world today? Krishna says these acts must be performed. Indeed, they purify even the great souls. You have to ask yourself, do I want to be purified, or am I just playing around? Am I just treading water, passing the days here, living in the ashram, passing the days, or living in my house and passing the days? Is that what it's all about? You see, for Krishna consciousness to be powerful and dynamic, you really have to get a grip on yourself and face these questions. What am I doing and why? Then you start to feel the potency of Lord Chaitanya's movement becoming available to you. You have to actually think about what you're doing, why you're doing it. Now, our lifestyle is conducive for that. Our lifestyle, our Krishna conscious lifestyle, consists of sacrifice, charity, and penance. If we give that up, we will not be able to think properly. This is hard for many devotees to understand. They think, okay, I may slack off a bit. Yeah, I may not be so strict in my spiritual habits, but still, I have a clear understanding of all the Hare Krishna beliefs. No, it doesn't work like that. As the purport explains, the various purificatory processes are meant to distill your consciousness so that you can actually understand Krishna. We're not dealing with religious beliefs. We are dealing with the experience of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. If you want to understand Krishna as experience, then you have to be careful what you do with your consciousness. It is not a matter of studying theology and accumulating religious ideas and beliefs. We are being trained to directly experience the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Therefore, purification is an absolute necessity. That means we've got to think about this point. How in my life am I becoming purified? What arrangements have I made in my life for purification? And then become enthusiastic about it. Once you decide you need purification, once you understand, as this verse says, that purification is an inherent part of human life, then you might as well be happy about it. Why be very grudging about it? Okay, we got to get purified. I got to stay here and practice Krishna consciousness or I'll suffer. Well, it's better than living a material life. This attitude will not attract Krishna's attention. How would you like someone to treat you that way? Well, I guess being with you is better than being with other people. How would you appreciate that kind of affectionate relationship? Like Krishna, when he was provoking Rukmini, what did he tell her? He said, first of all, you could have married so many other persons much more qualified than me. Why did you marry me? I don't have anything. People can't even figure out, am I a Kshatriya, am I a Vaishya? So many qualified princes wanted to marry you. Why did you choose me? And then he gave the ultimate blow. He said, let me tell you the truth. You know how so many of those princes who I fought, they wanted to marry you. They were so envious of me, and they wanted you. Actually, I just married you to get back at them. I would like someone to tell you that. The only reason why I have a relationship with you was just to get back at the guys who hated me because they wanted you. So I just wanted to provoke them. He told Rukmini that. And of course, you know what the end result was. Rukmini just collapsed on the floor. The Shastra says like a banana tree knocked down by a high wind. So then Krishna manifested four hands and picked her up with two hands and smoothed her hair back with the other two hands. And then he said, please forgive me. You know, we're householders. It's a main pleasure of a householder man to come home and have joking words with the wife. Krishna's very outrageous. I was just trying to have a little fun, you know. I wanted to see anger on your beautiful face. So everybody can understand. Of course, this is Krishna's Leela, and there's not one drop of material problem or material fault. But looked at another way, you would not like a relationship in which someone was just doing things for you in a grudging way. They just were associating with you because, well, there's nothing else better to do, so I figure I might as well be with you. You'd hate that. But this is what we hand to Krishna every day and call it devotional service. This is our problem. First of all, no one is serving Krishna. Then the very few who serve Krishna have a real attitude about it. Either they don't think about what they're doing, they're just satisfied to feel relief from material existence, or they think about what they're doing with a grudging attitude, like, yeah, you got to do this, you know. Otherwise, you know, they say your whole life is useless. You got to do this stuff. You got to serve, you know. You got to chant Hare Krishna. Our problems are an attitude problem. Attitude can only be corrected by becoming manishi, deeply thoughtful. How can I improve my service to Krishna? What can I do that would attract Krishna's mercy more upon me? Once we start thinking in that way, from the core of our being, then you see the magic of devotional service start to unfold before you. Then the action gets going. Now, how long is that going to take? Who can say? This kind of heartfelt, dynamic reaction doesn't come simply by sitting at an initiation yajna. It's something you have to do. You have to voluntarily decide, for the sake of Krishna's pleasure, I will adopt sacrifice, charity, and penance, yajna, dana, tapa. Now, what about the manishi? Manishi nam, even for the great souls. As Krishna says, even they are purified by sacrifice, charity, and penance. You remember, of course, in Nectar of Devotion, Rupa Goswami explains that even for a devotee on the high levels of bhakti, that devotee performs the activities of devotional service just like a sadhaka, just like someone who's on the sadhana platform. But within himself, he's thinking of his relationship with Krishna. So this is how important these activities of sacrifice, charity, and penance are. It's not that when you become on the high platform of bhakti that you're going to I don't need to anymore demonstrate any regulated hearing and chanting about the Lord. I don't need to rise in the morning anymore. I don't need to associate with devotees anymore. I'm just completely on the spontaneous platform. It's me and Krishna. No. Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, Nectar Devotion, instructs that even on the high level of bhakti, while you're relishing your relationship with Krishna within, from without, you are performing all the rules and regulations of devotional service. In other words, we might as well develop some affection for the practice of bhakti yoga. It's not that when you become high-level devotee, then you push it all away and, it's just me and Krishna. No. Well, since these devotional activities, the very activities that you're being given now are meant to accompany you all the way on your march back to Godhead, you might as well start to relish them. Relish what Krishna has given you. And in this way, you won't have such a rebellious feeling in your heart, a grudging attitude. And then you'll see how Krishna reveals to you the pleasures of bhakti yoga. But first, we have to be practical. I must become purified. You can see that those devotees who have made their peace with purification, they can actually be stable in Krishna consciousness. I'm sure you know that. You can look around and see there are some devotees who just made peace with this point. I must become purified. I must establish myself with sacrifice, charity, and penance. That's the way it's going to be. They're peaceful. Everybody can see that. And then there are other devotees, they have not come to grips with this point. And you know what that means? Spaced out. They're irresolute. Bahushaka hyanantascha buddhiyo vivasayanam. Their intelligence is many-branched. So this is a very easy and appropriate way how to get into the heart of bhakti. You have to convince yourself using all the resources that Krishna is making available to you. Guru, sadhu, shastra, the association of devotees, everything you utilize to make that heartfelt, informed, and knowledgeable decision that I'm going to serve Krishna with great determination because Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And Krishna is asking that there always be sacrifice, charity, and penance in my life. They're not to be given up even when I become a great soul. Any questions? Yes. If you're chanting Hare Krishna without trying to avoid offenses, then material desires will cling to you. And those material desires will be very difficult to distinguish from spiritual desires. That's why Lord Chaitanya explains about the creeper, Bhakti Lata, and the devotional creeper, and the weeds which look like the devotional creeper. It's very difficult to distinguish between the two. So if you are not having as your goal to chant Hare Krishna without offense, then the weeds of material desires go along with your devotional creeper, and you think it's all the same thing. The easiest solution to this problem that you have observed is the dedication to chanting Hare Krishna properly with attention, day after day after day. That'll do it. Especially if you make that effort in the association of others who are dedicated toward that same goal, then you'll feel very inspired. Yes? Yes. For example, you can take today's verse. And Krishna is saying, acts of sacrifice, charity, and penance are not to be given up. And so then ask yourself, well, what do I feel about that? Do I really accept that? I mean, in terms of how I'm going to live my life? Do I really see the need for sacrifice, charity, and penance? Or am I just kind of, you know, reciting the verse because that's what you do as a Hare Krishna? You've got to put your heart and your intelligence into bhakti. It's not just meant, you know, it's not meant to be a blind religious belief. Yeah, Bhagavad Gita ki jai, Lord Sri Krishna ki jai. But meanwhile, your mind is somewhere else. You know how to put your heart into something, yes? Okay. So that's what Krishna is asking here. Put your heart into acts of sacrifice, charity, and penance. Don't just do these things in a grudging way, in a mechanical way. Understand how it's good for you. You know yourself. If you know that something's good for you, you're going to do it, right? Without a doubt. So we have to convince ourselves of the value of devotional service. Anything else? And please remember what makes the whole process difficult. You've got to lay the blame where the blame should be laid. The kind of society that we are living in does everything to discourage genuine spiritual dedication. You get no support. You get no appreciation. And that's what rattles you. So think about that. Get used to it. Understand what are the advantages, what are the disadvantages. This is Kali Yuga. You have to be expert in understanding the reality of Kali Yuga and how to deal with that reality. That's being smart. These things are not taught at any university. Well, don't you remember the verse for tonight? Yagya dana tapa karma nachajam karyamevata. You forgotten already? Acts of sacrifice, charity, and penance are not to be given up. You have to see in your life how you're applying Krishna's injunction. This Bhagavad Gita is a tough book, isn't it, sometimes? When you want to be in Maya, this is the first book you close and leave on your bookshelf. You just feel good that it's on your bookshelf, but you never read it. Because Krishna is too straightforward in Bhagavad Gita. Yes. Which one do you choose? All right, anything else? Hare Krishna, glory to the Prabhupada.